Sport
on the Clare Byrne Show
with Visa. Everything's a tap in with Visa, wherever the game takes you.
Off the Balls, Colm Buhig is here. Now, I was thinking about you at the weekend because you did give us a prediction on the hurling. Didn't work out in total. But you were at the Cork match. Are you all right?
It's the third time in a row, you know. As I was saying to my father, it's like, we got to stop going to games together.
You're ruining it. You're jinxing it,
honestly,
are you?
Honestly, we're ruining each other. 2024 final against Clare, which is a heartbreaker right at the end. But we weren't that disappointed after that one because that was a great match. Then last year, Tipperary capitulation in the second half.
Yes.
Already famous.
Yeah,
2 points scored in the second half last year. 5 points scored in the second half this year against Galway. The only consolation is that it was the semi-final this time, not the final. There's something more, I think there's something worse about losing in the final.
So how did this year compare to the last two?
I still think Tipperary was the worst of the three last year, the final last year. I think that was a humiliation and embarrassing. There was tinges of that this year, but it's more like now we're just starting to question what the psychological issue is with Cork. Clearly, they just haven't recovered from last year. They didn't do a homecoming. Do you remember that? They didn't do it.
They left it off.
Yeah. And I wonder, did they not get closure? We actually spoke with Cyril Farrell about that this morning on Off the Ball Breakfast. And obviously, he was given the Galway side of things. Like, Galway were immense. And Galway were largely written off by a lot of people. Not everyone. There'd be people listening here now in their cars or wherever saying that they fancy Galway. And I believe some people when they say that. But I think a large swathe of the country thought Cork can get into the final. And then, sure, Donlough Cusack and Joe Canning have this big argument on television about the trains being booked out and all ahead of the final for Cork. Ringmahon Rangers FC calling off their FAI Cup game against Bowes because I don't know if their players or people will be around because of the All-Ireland final.
That's understandable. All that is understandable. So, you know.
It plays into the perception of Cork that they got complacent. And there's the natural arrogance and all that and looking to the final. But like, there's no one harsher on Cork than Cork people, trust me. And the crowd were very angry in Croke Park on Saturday.
Then we moved to yesterday and I watched every single bit of that game. It was brilliant, I thought.
Yeah.
Certainly the first half. And I was thinking about your prediction about Limerick, which of course ultimately came to pass. The first half, though, Clare were absolutely playing out of their skins. And I was thinking, oh, Cullum's going to come in. Anyway, Limerick won the game fair and square, I thought, because Clare just were off the pace in the second half.
Yeah, I mean, Tony Kelly scores that penalty for Clare in the 57th minute to go 6 points clear. And Clare don't score again.
Yeah.
Don't get a point. They only scored 1-3 in the second half. I think one of those scores was from play. At the same time, Limerick, I think, had about 15 wides in total, which is a bit unlike them because they rack up high scores traditionally in this under John Kiely. But it was enough for them in the end and they probably shaded it.
They were well rattled in the first half.
Totally, yeah. Clare were excellent. And I thought this was a harder game to call. And Clare have a backing of themselves. Like, they only won the All-Ireland 2 years ago. It was Shane O'Donnell's last game. We talked about that on Friday when he announced his retirement. And he had a great moment in the first half. There was a beautiful block to prevent not a certain Limerick goal, but a shot on target for sure. And it went up to Shane O'Donnell on the other end. Great bit of skill and he put it over.
Yeah.
It was like, Clare are good enough to actually win this on their day. But I don't know if there was a lack of belief in themselves at the end of that match, where it was the opposite with Limerick. They never really panicked in the way that Cork did, panicking against Galway the day before, and prematurely went for goals. Like, Sarah Donovan was on with us there last week, that's Thursday, a Cork woman who said she doesn't trust Cork. I always trust Limerick, even when they're playing badly, Clare. I trust Limerick. Like, and John Kiely's record in finals,
I just wondered with Clare, like, we were talking on Friday on the programme about pacing yourself in a marathon, you know, not going out too hard. And just the pace that they started that game yesterday, was it sustainable throughout the second half? Clearly it wasn't, but just there was something that happened. Like, Limerick came out roaring after the break.
Yeah.
And Clare just, I don't know what it was. It was just gone.
I always wondered, if you do sprint the start of a marathon, will you be far enough ahead to just get over the line?
No, because you hit the wall.
Yeah. And I don't know if they completely hit the wall, Clare. It's not like they disappeared in terms of threats of scoring. They just didn't score that last 13 minutes plus of the match. And Diarmaid Burns really stepped up for Limerick too. They always do. They always have these players. But you talked about Limerick being rattled at the start. They were. There was a cross-field attempt of a passage without a play, which really stands out at that level of the game, that high quality, that it looked bad. And that was Clare's doing, not just Limerick, you know.
And what were people saying this morning on Off the Ball about the black card that wasn't?
Well, the prevailing feeling is that they need to clarify that rule. So it was given as a yellow, but it is, for all intents and purposes, Nicky Quaid committing a professional foul. It was cynical and deliberate. Knew what he was doing to prevent the goal being scored. Mm-hmm.
And unambiguous as well. Yeah. I mean, you saw
the ball
it
also went into the net, because it hit off Barry Nash's shin.
Yeah.
So you could also claim that it was counted. Now, Barry Nash could claim, oh, I heard the whistle go and I knew the game had stopped, so that's why he did something like that. But it looked, whatever about the rule, and it does need clarification, it looked like a black card, if that makes sense. Mm-hmm. It was the rhythm of a black card. And Nicky Quaid spoke about it with ourselves afterwards. And, you know, it's not like Nicky Quaid came out all guns blazing saying it was the right call either.
What was he saying?
He says, it kind of all happened so fast and I took him down. It wasn't necessarily I knew what I was doing, but he didn't deny the fact that he prevented what was an amazing opportunity for Clare. And I suppose it was a tone, really, if I'm to summarise it for you, of them's the rules. Because at the moment, it does veer towards that.
Yeah.
And that could have been incredibly decisive. Now, that is the penalty that we talked about. That's Tony Kelly dispatching it.
I know.
That's the last score.
I know, yeah. They got it in the end, but it changes the dynamic, you could argue, or the momentum, and then
like Nicky Quaid's one of the greatest goalkeepers of all time. If he goes off the pitch, which would essentially be the rest of the game, that mentally could completely change the positivity factor for Clare and the fear factor for Limerick.
And we'll never know. You wouldn't have had Donald Trump ringing Gerard Burns.
Are you surprised about this in any way?
I'm not really. I'm not surprised that the phone call happened.
But you're surprised that they listened.
I am. Yeah, I am. I think Belgium are too.
Yeah, so Belgium, as of this morning...
Sorry, we should explain what we're talking about, if people haven't heard about this.
So Donald Trump intervenes, the call to FIFA, following Balogun, the American player who scored 3 goals this tournament, gets a straight red card in the last round. And so he's going to miss, on paper, the last 16 game for America, which is against Belgium overnight tonight. And so the red card actually still stands, but it's been suspended for a year.
So if he's bowled at any time in the next year, the red card will
absolutely, which stand. Is on paper, yes, but obviously completely irrelevant in terms
completely
of context
irrelevant.
Of what's happening this evening. Belgium, understandably furious, as are the rest of the world. Belgium have launched an appeal, but it's obviously a matter of hours away till the game. So the guy's going to play, almost certainly.
The appeal process doesn't start until that game is done.
I don't think they're going to get that done in time.
I don't, but it's there.
It's a mess. There'll be a fallout from it. Like if Belgium win the game, you could just say that was annoying on their behalf. If America win the game and Balogun gets the winner, mm-hmm. But like it's somehow, do you know, it's not surprising and it's still quite shocking that it's like, I mean, is it this in your face, is it that illegitimate, mm-hmm. is it really that, are they actually going to be that blatant about it? And thankfully the world of football has come out very strongly about it. They are condemning it. Wayne Rooney was one of many high profile figures saying that this stinks, this whole thing stinks on television.
When the head is rotten, you know, we can shout all we want.
It is remarkable. Like Gianni Infantino, the FIFA president, makes Sepp Blatter. Do you remember Sepp Blatter before? Makes him look like George Bush in comparison. We all thought George Bush, oh, that would be the worst it ever gets. And now it's Infantino and Trump. And it stinks because there was so much cynicism, justifiably so, before a ball was kicked at this World Cup. On the eve of the tournament starting, in that press conference at Infantino, and everyone said, oh, this is going to be terrible. And then the football starts. And the great thing about the football starting, Claire, is that, oh, it's actually quite good and entertaining. And the worst thing about the football starting is that it distracts you from the actual real serious issues at FIFA, which is a symbol of the problem of the first world at the moment. And then something like this reminds you of it. Mm-hmm. It's supposed to be escapism, but then you can't avoid it.
No, you can't.
In front of your face.
You can't. It's there. It's the whole way through. Now, did you watch the England game overnight?
No, I could pretend I did, but there's not a chance.
I could too. I was listening to the radio at 5 this morning, and there were cock-a-hoop, like wild.
I woke up to my first push notification when I woke up this morning was Jordan Henderson's serious injury. Did you see this? He fell over.
This was in the celebrations afterwards.
He didn't play a second of the game, but he got a yellow card and severely injured as well, which is separate incidents. And he jumped over the advertising hoardings back onto the pitch and landed on his arm. But it is like genuinely a horrific break. Like it's like as
he break his wrist.
Yeah, don't watch it. As in it's squeamish inducing. And it's funny because Harry Kane spoke about this afterwards. I'm only saying it's funny because his voice was almost gone, really hoarse. And he kind of played it down because he was the adrenaline of it. It's like, oh, he fell. I think he's okay. But then the England manager, Thomas Tuchel, clarified afterwards, like, no, it's a really serious injury. And I believe you can see it. I haven't. I'm not going to do that.
No, I don't think I'm going to watch that either. Why? Why
maybe
have
no problem with doing that.
Yeah.
So that's the first thing I saw this morning before the result, and I woke up 3-2. And now I watched the extended highlights, and we talked about it on the show this morning. And it looked like a hell of a game. All the talk was about the altitude beforehand.
Yeah, it didn't make any difference.
Not in the end. Yeah, they won 3-2 and they went 2-0 up. And it was a fantastic match. They went down to 10 men. They got a player sent off in the second half. I wonder, will they write to FIFA?
Yeah, we'll see. Brazil out. Extraordinary overnight as well.
Yeah, it's the longest they've gone, I think, without winning the World Cup now. So they won it in 2002 last. They've had a dreadful record since then. Carlo Ancelotti is their manager. He's even charmed Roy Keane. Roy Keane says, oh, he's such a cool guy. He's one of the best managers of all time, but he couldn't do it with this Brazil crowd. They're average, but they should be better than that. Like, they still have talent in their side.
So it's England and Norway.
Yeah, that's right.
Next.
Saturday, which is a much more sociable time of 10 o'clock this Saturday night, Irish time.
Okay, we'll watch that one. Now, we have to mention Padraig Harrington.
Amazing.
Tell us what he has done. Fourth time, is it?
Yeah, US Senior Open. He's won it again.
Incredible.
He's a great knack for winning major tournaments consecutively. So he won the Open in 2007 and 2008. And now he's clearing up on this Senior Open. I think he finished four shots ahead of Stuart Sink on 12 under. I looked at Padraig Harrington's age. He's mid-50s. I think specifically he's 54. He's around that. And now there's a question of, is he too good for the Seniors Open? Should be playing with the pros regularly. And he still does, but he doesn't make an awful lot of cuts in tournaments. But he's probably too good for that level.
Mm-hmm.
He's an amazing man. He's one of our greatest sports people of all time. And during COVID, when there was no live sport, we did Mount Rushmore's in every county. Padraig Harrington is probably the most consistently suggested name.
He's also incredibly decent. Like, nice
fella. He's such a great interview.
Yeah.
He's so open.
He is.
He speaks with the openness of someone that you know well. And yet he's one of the icons of Irish sport.
Now, what do we mention before we go?
Wimbledon was very interesting during the
weekend. I didn't
really
pay attention to Wimbledon
a lot of people
over the
didn't,
weekend because it was too much.
Understandable.
Yeah.
Because Ireland beat Australia in the Rugby 2 in the Nations Championship. But just a note on the Wimbledon draw on the women's side, it's been decimated again. A lot of the big names are gone. So Aryna Sabalenka was eliminated by Naomi Osaka. And then last year's finalists are both out. Amanda Anisimova is gone, and so is Iga Swiatek. She's the defending champion. So that's all happened over the weekend.
Djokovic is powering through though, right?
He's fine, yeah. He's advancing very, very nicely. And you have Jannik Sinner there as well. Of course, there's no Carlos Alcaraz. Djokovic is looking for that 25th slam, which will put him as the greatest statistical player of all time on both courts.
He's a machine.
He's I was going to say inhumane, but that sounds very harsh. But there is something about him which is unrelatable to the average person. Yes.
Colm, thank you so much.
Thank you.
Colm Buhig there, hoping to get some sleep at some point. It's just too much sport on at strange times of the night. Right.
Sport on the Claire Byrne Show with Visa. Everything's a tap-in with Visa. Wherever the game takes you.